to the Frommer Travel Show. I'm your host, Pauline Frommer. Thank you so much, as always, for being here. Have you ever dreamed about traveling solo? My guest has created an empire doing just that and helping women who have that dream. She is Beth Santos. She is the founder of Wanderful, and now she has a wonderful book out. I'm using so many W's in this because there's a lot of W's to say. It's called Wander Woman: How to Reclaim Your Space, Find Your Voice, and Travel the World Solo. Hey, Beth, lovely to have you on the Frommer Travel Show.
Hi, Pauline. Thanks for having me.
You know, I spend my whole life writing guidebooks. And I feel like your book is kind of a guidebook, but a mental one. It's about, yes. It's less about the nitty gritty of where to find Tampax in Rome or, you know, whatever, than it is about preparing yourself for the adventure of traveling solo. And I know you are a big proponent of traveling solo. Why do you think it's an important thing to do?
You know, and thanks for recognizing that about this book, because it is, I think a lot of people, when they first hear about the book, it's kind of hard to describe. You described it actually better than anybody. I should just do that, because I always say, well, it's kind of a travel guide, but it's also kind of a manifesto. And really, you know, a lot of what we have out there in the world right now is very how to. It's like, okay, how to pack or how to find, you know, and this, I think the thing I really wanted to address was all of the other things, how to build the confidence to actually take that trip with, if you haven't thought about doing it before, and how to actually make those confidence jumps along the way. And I felt that there was so much of a need to discuss this. And I think traveling alone is such a special experience. It really gives you the ability to connect with yourself on a different level, you know, outside of your home cultural context, outside of your relationships, and really experience the world through your own eyes. And I think it's something that everyone deserves, especially women, regardless of your, you know, home situation. If you're married, if you have children, I have so many people that say, oh, I'm in a relationship, I wouldn't travel alone. I said, you absolutely should travel alone, even when you're in these relationships, because it is such an enriching experience. And the book was really designed to help people see that along the way, to kind of make a case for traveling alone, and to give people the tools to get out there.
Well, to play devil's advocate, I mean, you say, yes, it's an enriching experience. It's a time where you can actually listen to yourself, be yourself, not in the context of your family or your job or your school or whatever it is.
Yep.
Why can't you take that time at home? Why is travel such an important component in that?
So I love the way you're phrasing this question, because I actually believe that it can be done in environments that are familiar. It can. It's harder. It's much harder. And so to kind of explain this a little bit more, I believe that travel is so much more than just putting yourself in a new place. I think there is so much mindset that is involved in a travel experience, a truly enriching travel experience. You need to challenge the way you see the world. You need to step outside of your comfort zone. You need to try something new. And I actually do believe that you can do all of those things in many parts of even your hometown. There's always undiscovered, you know, when I say undiscovered, I mean undiscovered by you, right? Places that you don't know, moments that you feel uncomfortable and that you feel like you're trying new things. I think that does happen anywhere, including at home. However, I do think that physically taking yourself outside of your home context allows it, it's much easier to find something new and to get uncomfortable and to challenge the way you see the world when you're not surrounded by the familiar stimuli of your home environment. And so I think it just physically takes you out of that place a little bit more, and it makes it a little bit easier to have those experiences. But I do actually believe that travel can be, you can travel wherever you go. Doesn't have to be thousands of miles away.
Right, right. But your audience is women. And usually when women want to travel, the very first subject matter that comes up is safety. In fact, in the book, you address that. You say, if you got this book as a gift, it's probably because they are hoping I will address how to do this safely. And I love how you approach safety because you quote the great Audre Lorde.
Yes.
I studied her a long time ago, and she talks about the mythical norm. Can you tell our listeners what that is? Because I think it's so important.
Oh, this is a fascinating thing. So Audre Lorde in 1984 in one of her books wrote, coined the phrase, the mythical norm. And I actually learned about this book while reading Beyond Guilt Trips by Dr. Anu Taranath, which is a fantastic book. And the idea of the mythical norm is that anyone who is white, male, straight, financially secure, Christian is kind of normal. And everyone else who doesn't fit into that description is sort of abnormal. And what I mean by that is so many messages and expectations keep in mind that kind of that one type of person, that sort of normal definition of a person. And then everyone else becomes the exception, you know, the adjustment that we have to make because she's a woman, you know, like there's travel and then there's travel for women, you know, and it's right. Like it's different. And I thought that was really important to bring up to women who are thinking about traveling alone, that, you know, for so long we have been looked at as and talked to as if we are this exception to this rule. You know, again, there's travel and then there's women's travel, you know.
Right.
Actually, women dominate travel. Women are by far traveling more than men are, and by far spending more than men are.
Yeah. And I loved your statistic that we make, I think it's 80% of the travel decisions when we travel with others, which I know is the case in my family.
We do. And it's, you know, if you think about that, and I think a lot of people, when they take a step back, think, yeah, that's right. Because not only is it because women are traveling more, but it's also because a lot of times women are still the ones who are making a lot of these domestic decisions. They're booking the flights. I have a husband and three children. Whenever we travel, I'm deciding where we're staying. And that's me making a decision for five people. So there is a lot of power, both domestically, but also professionally. There are a lot of women in roles where they're doing a lot of bookings. It's still, I think, 90% of receptionists are still women. So I think there is a lot of power in the consumption of travel that is held by women.
Sure.
But then also women traveling alone on their own as well.
But in terms of safety, I think this idea of the norm comes in that sometimes maybe our gut feeling is being influenced by our prejudices. Yes. I have a really bad habit of fighting with friends of friends on social media about things that are important to me. And maybe...
Oh no, Pauline, don't fall victim to that.
I know. But 6 months ago, you know, I write a book, two books really, to New York City. The city is my muse. I love her. I think New York is a great place to go. And it became very popular to dump on all urban destinations about 6 months ago. It wasn't just New York, although New York got it hit hard. And often I would bring up the statistics. I would say, look, New York has more people than 40 out of the 50 U.S. states. And so you're going to hear about things going wrong here, but per capita, we're actually more safe. And so, and I would always get pushback with, well, I feel unsafe when I'm there. And it drove me freaking nuts. So why should we discount what we're feeling about safety and issues?
The thing about safety, and I'm glad you bring this up, because safety is, as you mentioned, it is the top thing we talk about when we talk about women traveling alone. It is the top piece of information. It is what covers so much of the online content you see about women traveling alone. A lot of it has to do with the, and I'm using air quotes, you know, the quote unquote dangers of solo travel. And I don't think safety is given enough time and nuance as a conversation. I think it is a very, very complex issue that is not black and white. And sure. What I mean by that is how safe you are in a place, not even how safe you feel, we're getting there, but how safe you are in a place is related to so many things. It's dependent on so many parts of who you are, what you look like, who you love, what your ability or disability is, what your religion is, what language you speak. Do you speak the language of the place that you're visiting? But then also external factors. What is the political situation right now, which may be different 3 months from now?
Yeah.
What is the weather? Is it slippery there? I mean, it literally, you know, have you been there before? How many times have you been there before? Have you ever had any past trauma that may make you nervous about being in certain situations? How much have you traveled in general by yourself? You know, all of these things play into how safe or unsafe you actually are. And it changes on every trip. But I think there is a lot of embedded prejudice, whether we realize it or not, about places. And that is what causes these feelings too. And we talk a lot about that. I'm using the royal we. We talk a lot about that. I talk a lot about that in the book of understanding that. You know, there was a survey that went out a few years ago that I was sent and, you know, asking for my response. And it was basically, you know, rate these places that you've been to on how safe or unsafe you felt there. And again, this question of feeling came back to me because feeling may imply some implicit biases I have about a place based on how that place looks, or, you know, if it's a low income area, maybe I feel a certain way about that or not. And that reflects more on me than on the actuality of if that place is safe
sure.
or not, you know? And so I think our feelings are really not just defined by, you know, the reality of what a place is, but also what our past experience is and how much we've actually been to places like this in the world, or how much exposure we've had to the world. And it's not a very good metric to be measuring. You know, it's so difficult to pin down. And I think that that's a really good example talking about New York City, Pauline, because if you talked about New York 30 years ago, okay, I understand maybe where people are coming from. I know it was, you know, statistically a little bit more dangerous back then.
Absolutely.
Sometimes the commentary stays much longer than the facts.
Sure.
And so we still talk about New York as this very dangerous place, even though actually it's one of the safest cities, I think, in America.
And in the world, according
to the world. Yeah, yeah.
Statistics. Yeah.
Exactly.
So you do go into, you know, we don't want to say that, we don't want to be Pollyannas. Obviously, women have more issues with safety than men for very historic reasons. And, yes. you know, and that's just a fact. But, you know, you give very actionable advice, like maybe make your first walk around during the daytime. Always could keep the name of your where you're staying and where it is with you. Don't get blazing drunk your first night alone. I mean, there's things that you can do to deal with safety. And you talk about this in the book. You also talk about other really interesting issues that I don't think that many other travel writers address as much as they should. Like, what happens if you bump up against a cultural norm that you don't like or you don't agree with? You know, you've gone to a destination, it's taken thousands of years for that culture to be created, but you see something wrong. How do you deal with that?
Yeah. And unfortunately, it's been brought to my attention that this book perhaps raises more questions than it answers. And you know what? That's the intent here. It's to build awareness and understanding of how many things do go through our minds when we travel that are unanswered. You know, I'm not going to tell you the answer to what to do besides say that it's really hard. It's really hard. And it happens to a lot of travelers that we go to places we're expecting wonderful experiences. And that's what we get, you know, by and large. But also you experience somebody else's real life, you know, sure. And somebody else's real life has ups and downs. It has things that they're excited about and proud of and things that are not so great. And sometimes, you know, you witness something that is part of someone's culture that either they are very proud of or they're not, could be either. That may be against your own set of beliefs and your own set of values. And as you were saying, you know, the truth is that there's not a whole lot that you can do as a traveler to change somebody else's thousands of years of culture. It's just not going to happen. And that can be really hard to stomach for some people, especially me. I'm very, you know, I feel very strongly and very like strong in my convictions a lot of times. And I want to say, if I see something, you know, I'm going to change it. But then you have to question, well, is that my role here as a traveler? Should I actually be in a place of listening and digesting? Is it my place to be affecting somebody else's home, you know, in the short time that I'm there? And even if I try, will I, you know, will it actually happen? So it's hard. I think it's hard for people to stomach, but it's true. And I agree. It's not something that's talked about very much, which is why I did want to address it, even though it is a hard conversation, because I want people to feel prepared for that feeling a little bit more and to think a little bit more about that.
Well, and I think it broadens your mind. It broadens your understanding of what's out there in the world. Many years ago, when my older daughter was in ninth grade, we did a volunteer vacation with Global Volunteers, which is a terrific organization that only deals with children and most importantly, only does projects it has been asked by the local community to do.
Oh, cool.
You know, so it's not a colonial mindset. And we were in India teaching English, because if you don't speak English in India, and every region has their own local language, you can't get anything beyond a manual labor job as an adult. Yeah. So it's important for kids to learn English. And they bring in volunteers every 2 weeks. And so you teach for 2 weeks, then another team comes in, and there are stats showing that this improves the kids' ability to learn English. My ninth grade daughter noticed that the boys and the girls sat separately, and that the girls did not talk in class, and that the boys sat at the front and the girls were kind of relegated to the back. And this upset her greatly.
Yeah.
And so she wanted us to do a team game where we would assign teams and mix up the boys and the girls.
Wow.
And we tried it, and it was utter chaos. We lost control. Once they saw that they were being forced, these were like kids probably 12, forced to sit next to somebody of the opposite gender, they freaked, and we could not get control back. And at the end of the day, my daughter said, and the principal had to come in and restore order in our classroom. It was a total disaster. We got back to the homestay we were staying in, and my daughter said, "Wasn't that great? Let's do it again tomorrow." And I said to her, "We're not here to be agents of social change. We're only here. We've been asked here to teach English, and that's all we can do." And we had a huge fight. She didn't talk to me for 2 weeks, which is rough when you're traveling together.
Yeah.
Eventually, she did her college essay on it that I was writing.
Oh, fascinating.
But anyway, so I was happy to see that you brought up this in the book, and you actually, I mean, to get to this point where you recognize that something may be wrong, it's important to be what you call a culturally aware traveler. How does somebody get to that point? What should somebody be doing in our very busy lives? I know it's hard to do extra to prepare for your vacation, but it can make your vacation a richer experience, right? What are some of the things you recommend somebody does?
Yeah. And I think the key here is really open observation. And, you know, to respond to your story about your daughter, not only are there times that we come across something that we dislike when we travel, there are also times that we may actually be the ones who are in the wrong. Not saying that that's what it was in your story.
Sure.
But there is a maturity that I think comes with understanding that the thing that you fiercely believe is right may be what somebody else fiercely believes is wrong. And that we're all human, you know, we're all at the same level of equality. Really, no one is inherently a better person than another one, you know, that we are raised in certain ways and that's the lives that we've come to know and that we all believe differently. And I think the cultural awareness comes from this understanding of recognizing that, of recognizing that, you know, my set of beliefs and values have been carefully created over time of my life, and they may be very different from your sets of beliefs and values. And there is so much that we can learn from one another. And in fact, there may be times where something that you thought was completely off, actually, you realize they are doing it better, you know?
Absolutely. That happens all the time in traffic.
Oh my goodness. There are so many times I go to a place and I'm like, wow, I wish we could take this back to the US. This is way better than how we do it at home, you know? And that's so important. And I think that's so valuable. And exercising that ability to step outside of your own self and kind of, you know, let that sit for a minute and say, I'm really going to embrace how this is done. Even if it's something little, like I remember going to Portugal and noticing that people held their forks and knives in a different way than in the US. You know, they hold their fork in their non-dominant hand and their knife in their dominant hand. And in America, what we do is we cut our food and then we set our knife aside. We pick up our fork with our right hand and we eat with our fork. And in Europe, they eat with both at the same time and they use their knife to shovel the food onto the fork and then they eat. And I went, wow. That's just so much more efficient. You're right. You have two hands. Use them both. You know, why are we all doing the switching thing? I think getting to that place when it's an easy thing, when it's a hard thing, that can happen right at home. And there are things that I recommend people do to practice stepping outside of your comfort zone, even before your trip, you know, going to a different town and just observing what's there, being aware of the community that's there, the businesses that are there, doing a weekender by yourself. Just do a solo trip to the town next door for a weekend. Get a hotel, take yourself out to dinner, go to a local museum, open your eyes as if you were traveling thousands of miles away. I guarantee you're going to learn something new, even in a short distance like that.
And preparing for your trip coming up, you recommend reading a history book or watching a movie or a documentary set in the place. I mean, there's so much that you can do to bring travel to your daily life and that actually, you know, makes travel more fun. You also recommend journaling. Why is it important to, we're writers. That's what we do for a living.
Why do we want the
non-writers to do this?
I think it gives a moment of reflection. Again, there is a lot that is coming at you in a travel experience, and especially when you're traveling alone, because when you're not traveling alone, you have the benefit of a buffer, right? You have another person who maybe you can digest things with or who can notice and observe things for you and then kind of share that information with you later. Like, oh, I saw how somebody gets on the bus. Let's use that later. You know, that's something that another traveler can do with you. If you're by yourself, a lot of that, both responsibility, but also that experience, that's held in you. And I think a journal can be a really good way for you to still process a lot of the things that you're noticing with yourself. It's also a great thing to do while by yourself. If you're kind of nervous about, you know, being in a restaurant and sitting alone and having to go through a whole meal sitting by yourself, bring a little journal, reflect on the things that you're seeing, what you see. You know, it can be a nice little souvenir. Write down what your experience is like, what the interesting thing about the thing you're eating is, what the environment is like, who's sitting away, you know, down the way from you, what do they look like? All of that stuff, I think, can be really fun to revisit, but I really think it allows you to process a lot of these feelings and sort of start asking yourself, well, why do I feel this way? Especially if you have a moment where maybe you feel confused or frustrated or just very thoughtful or questioning, you know, you can work through that, I think, in a journal. And if you're not a big journaler, there's so many things you can do. You could just do bulleted, you know, notes. You could do an audio journal. You could do a video journal. Should I say, do it for yourself. You know, this is not starting a blog. This is not starting a podcast. Those are created for an audience.
Right.
This is for you to work through some of the thoughts that you have. You want to be fully, fully vulnerable with yourself so that you can really experience that self-growth during the process and even after you've returned home.
And now talking about being in the place, you had one piece of advice that I think I've never seen anybody else recommend, which was when you go to a destination, look for the immigrant communities and their businesses. So, yeah. You know, if you're in Jamaica, eat Chinese food.
Yeah.
That was a suggestion that blew my mind. Why do you think it's important to see what is a community of outsiders in the community you're visiting?
I think it's another layer to how rich and beautiful our world is, that it's not just about the people who are born there generations upon generations ago. It's about all the people who live there. I think immigrant communities are sometimes the best advocates of a place. You know, that is their chosen home. And so to be able to see how they interpret the place that they live in is so special. And the flavors are cool. You get a lot, you know, having even Chinese food, you mentioned, having Chinese food in the US and then having it in Portugal and then having it in China, all of those are very different experiences.
Oh, yeah.
Having it in Africa, you know, there's different flavors. I think actually this is slight tangent, but it's kind of fun. This is something that like McDonald's does. You know, McDonald's actually adjusts their menu to reflect the local palates. And you'll see that just ever so slightly. There's things that you'll see on a McDonald's menu in a different country that, you know, don't exist in your own country. Because they want to make sure that there's at least one thing on their menu that has like a little bit of that local flavor. And the same thing happens with any kind of cuisine you eat, is there is a certain palate in the local community. And so then the food, if we're specifically talking food, the food of the immigrant community is influenced by the local, the country, the local environment that that food is in. So even that tastes different. It has different, you know, so it's bringing really like, literally, no pun intended, a different flavor to this whole experience. But also, you're supporting such a special part of this community. You're really looking deeply into what is this place? And, you know, to that point of cultural awareness and cultural sensitivity, destinations are not just destinations. And what I mean by that is when we visit a place, we're visiting somebody's home. We're not just visiting a tourism spot. There's almost no place, bar maybe a couple.
Maybe Antarctica.
Places in the world. Maybe Antarctica, right. There's almost no place where there's no locals there. You know, even Cancun has locals. You know, like everyone has locals. And so recognizing that every time we go to a place, it's somebody's home. Maybe they were born there. Maybe they moved there. Maybe they're an expat. Maybe they immigrated there. That means that there is so much that we can embed ourselves in. And there's so much backstory and so much history that we might not be aware of. And that's where it goes into understanding maybe a little bit of the history of a place and the way a place is. I remember going to Hawaii and people would say, oh, go to a luau. But what they don't think about is, what is a luau? Why do they even have, you know, sometimes you just go and you passively watch a show and you don't even right. think about all of the deep culture that comes into that. Why do Hawaiians eat spam so much? Because did you know in the 40s, that's what was sent to the GIs who are stationed in Hawaii. They ended up with a ton of spam, which was not actually a good thing. You know, it was right. all of this canned food sent thousands and thousands of miles away, maybe a couple thousand miles away. You know, and because of military activity, and then they were stuck with all of the spam. And what did they do? Well, start making stuff out of it, you know, but that I think adds like a whole other layer to understanding a place and its why. And I think at the end just makes for a richer travel experience to know the root of something and to kind of embrace the story, but also embrace the reality of people's lives and,
sure.
and the people who live there.
Yeah. Well, you do that in the book. It's a wonderful book called Wander Woman, and I'm quoted in it. so honored yes. to be part of this book. And thank you so much for appearing on the Fromer Travel Show. It's always a delight speaking with you.
Thank you so much for having me, Pauline. It's been great.
That is it for this week's show, but I can't leave without acknowledging the mini miracle that occurred this week. There's been so much going on, so many, you know, different trials, both in the Supreme Court and in New York City. There are the protests at colleges across the country. And then there is something that Mayor Pete did. Now, I guess, Department of Transportation Pete did. Pete Buttigieg actually is going to be bringing American aviation closer to what's being done in Europe. And I shouldn't say American aviation. What I mean is the rules surrounding delays and cancellations are about to get a heck of a lot more consumer friendly. It's amazing news. There's going to be clearer rules about when the airlines owe money back. We're going to be covering it on Fromers.com. Probably won't be up if you listen to this podcast the day it comes out, but it should be up the next day. Our columnist, Bill McGee, he was actually with Mayor Pete. I keep calling him Mary Pete. I should call him Pete Buttigieg. He was with Pete Buttigieg when this was announced. And just to give one away, I don't know if you've ever been on a plane and you've paid an insane amount for Wi-Fi and then the Wi-Fi doesn't work. Well, you're going to be getting your money back, as it should have been from the very beginning. But now there's going to be federal regulations that say that if you buy a service like that from the airlines and it doesn't work, they're going to have to refund your money. That's just the tip of the iceberg. I don't want to give too much away here, but do go to Fromers.com. Do read about it. It's not going into effect for another 6 months or so. But once it does go into effect, I think it's going to be a real improvement for travelers. So nice to end this week's show on a really good note. As always, I thank you so much for listening. And to those who are traveling, may I wish you a hearty bon voyage.
Watching cable.